It's time for What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.
That's correct. I'm joined by Steve Abel from the Green Party on the line. Kia ora, Steve. How are you?
Kia ora. Well, thank you.
Awesome. I'm excited to chat about all that we have to talk about today. We're starting by talking a little bit about the government's aim to work towards net zero climate emissions, which heavily relies on private companies planting pine trees on Crown-owned land. This has come under fire for various reasons recently, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I want to start by just sort of unpacking what the policy involves. So it's supposedly the policy will allow for companies to plant on what is deemed to be low-value Crown land. What does that land look like, and are you concerned about this decision?
Yeah, I mean, it's a terrible idea, basically. There's a few reasons for it. The number one is that net offsetting is sort of a way of kidding ourselves that we're solving our emissions problem. It's sort of like an alcoholic paying somebody else to drink water and think that they've solved their drinking problem, when, you know, we have to actually stop emitting carbon emissions now at source, which is not to keep emitting them and then pay somebody to plant trees. And so the whole idea that our primary strategy around climate change is just to plant more pine trees is not a solution for climate change in itself. Secondly, what they're calling marginal land is often high country land. It's distant, it's not easy to harvest there. When you get really dry weather events, as we're going to get more increasingly as a result of climate change, pines are kind of fuel for future generations' wildfires, basically, like the fire we saw down at Lake Oho in the South Island, you know, with 48 homes were destroyed. Wilding pines are a major problem in the high country. I was just at a high country field today, and the farmers there, their major issue is wilding pines, and they're like, how do we solve this problem? Planting a whole lot of more pine forests is not going to help that. But also, this is Crown land. This is land that was set aside and should be used for conservation purposes. Inviting private companies to use publicly owned land to plant trees to make money out of carbon credits that aren't actually solving the climate problem, all of it adds up to being a terrible idea.
Mm. And so could you elaborate a little bit more on what feels problematic to you about relying on private companies to working towards to mitigating the climate crisis?
Well, they're in it for profit. They're not in it to mitigate the climate crisis. They're in it because there's a distortion in the emissions trading scheme whereby planting pine trees allows people to get credits, carbon credits, basically, that they can make a lot of money from. The Green Party policy is that we will remove all forestry from the emissions trading scheme so that you don't have that distortion, which is what means you see high country farms, like high country sheep and beef farms, converting on a huge scale to pine plantations, massive pine plantations. It's bad land use. It makes marginal land, as they call it, even more marginal. And marginal land also is a definition that thinks of land only for its productive value in a very kind of narrow sense. It doesn't think of biodiversity or, you know, wetlands as being productive, even though, of course, in the context of the ecological planet, those are the most productive ecosystems. But it regards this land, because it's high country, it doesn't, you know, have the level of fertility, it doesn't, you know, it's not as accessible, it gets called marginal land. So the effect of this distortion of the emissions trading scheme with pine trees is that we're losing lots of sheep and beef country, which is actually low emissions farming compared to low land dairy intensity. The real problem we've got with climate emissions in New Zealand is dairy intensity. That's what we have to be reducing if we're serious about cutting greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm. And so going back a little bit to this sort of conversation around biodiversity, what's the motivation behind just only planting pines, and what would be a better alternative, like planting native species, for example?
For offsetting, I mean, the only serious thing is permanent native forests. Mm. But really, you know, we need to protect what native forests we have, and because the first land cleared by settlers through colonisation after the, you know, the Raupatu and the confiscations and the Waikato and Taranaki and so forth, the first land cleared is the lowland, which is the engine room of biodiversity for indigenous ecosystems. So they cleared that, they drained it, they turned it into, you pasture for cows, and that's, we need to protect what we've got left. We've only got 7% of our lowland rainforest left, and so we need to protect that, and we need to allow it to thrive and grow. Planting trees in and of itself is not really necessary. I mean, nature is planting millions of trees constantly because, you know, that's what it does. It's actually about stopping trees from being cleared. It's actually allowing ecosystems to be healthy, protecting them from pests and predators, which do massive damage to indigenous forests. Like, we need to deal with those pests and predators that are destroying ecosystems. And then we need to cut emissions at source. Like, that's the serious solution. We have to be switching away from oil, gas and coal as the means of powering our society to renewable sources, wind, solar, you know, geothermal is not fully renewable, but it's a lot better than oil, gas and coal, and hydro, though we don't need any new hydro now, but we need to really heavily focus on wind and solar. And in terms of the agricultural systems, the whole world needs to move to more plant-based food production. It's far more efficient in terms of getting nutrition into human bodies and far less impactful on the environment. So it's a global challenge. We're part of that challenge. If we can produce more food that is plant-based rather than animal-based, we'll have a big positive impact on the climate.
And finally, so Climate Change Minister Simon Watts has said that the government could meet this goal as early as 2044. Do you think that's a feasible goal? Can you see that happening?
No, because it's, I mean, the point is, I can't reiterate too strongly that we need to think about zero actual emissions, not net zero emissions. So the idea that we're not cutting real emissions of carbon dioxide or nitrous oxide or methane, but we're just keeping on emitting the same amount and planting pine trees, it's just not a solution to climate change, not here, not anywhere. So the target is kind of, you know, questionable whether it can be achieved. One thing that you might see, means you see get achieved is because of economic downturn. There might be fewer cows produced, you know, the size of the New Zealand dairy herd might go down. So you might actually get us closer to meeting the target for that reason. But it's not because of a policy setting, it's because of an economic circumstance in the world. We saw that with COVID, you know. And this is the other sort of big challenge that we have to grapple with as a society, is that, you know, a growth economy is not good for the environment or for the climate. It's just kind of the unfortunate fact of the physics of it. We have to work out how to have an economy that sustains and looks after people in society and provides us with our needs in a way that doesn't extract and destroy the fundamental character of the ecosystems on which we depend, because that's the definition of unsustainable. So these current settings are part of a perpetuation of a mindset, which is that the only way to run an economy is to extract from nature and destroy it to make money.
Very quickly, before I let you go, I just want to touch on the Treaty Principles Bill, because, of course, last week we saw the second reading of the bill, which has been controversial, to say the least, and it was voted down. How are you feeling now that the bill is no more? And talk to us a little bit about what the atmosphere in the House was during the reading.
Yeah, it was pretty special, and in a sense, the first reading speeches were the more intense and dramatic. So, you know, there was a little more calmness in the room, I'd say, basically because of the inevitability of it being voted down. You know, only the ACT Party voted for it in the end. And then the whole parliament stood and sang Tutura Mai Ngā Iwi, Tato Tato A, which, I don't know, when I was a kid raised in the 70s, they used to teach us that at school. So everyone seems to know how to sing that song, and even the Speaker of the House joined in. And it was this, really, for me, a quite moving and beautiful moment where the song that was chosen is All of Us People Stand Together, all of us, Tata Tata A. It was kind of a song of unity about what Te Tiriti really is, which is, you know, the coming together of two distinct sovereign nations by mutual consent to words of Minor Jackson, you know, a profound base upon which to build a country. That is what identity is, in his words. And that song just seems so fitting. And in that moment, despite the, you know, terrible disservice the National Party has done us in allowing that bill to even come to Parliament, the National MPs also stood and sang Te Tiro Mai Ngā Iwi, and yeah, the New Zealand First MPs and the Labour MPs and the Green MPs and Te Pāti Māori. And sadly, the ACT Party sort of walked out of the room in a somewhat petulant manner. But, you know, that was it. That bill was in the bin. The anti-Māori and anti-treaty stuff won't go away, however. There are other examples of it coming down the line. The regulatory standards bill, there's a piece of legislation that New Zealand First are putting through to remove mention of Te Tiriti from a bunch of pieces of legislation. There are a number of things that are the Marine and Coastal Environment Act, Marine and Coastal Area Act, MACA, which is sort of a retreat, a regression to the Foreshore and Seabed Act, basically confiscating marine coastal environment from Māori. These are all things this government is still doing, so we shouldn't allow ourselves to think that that was the only anti-treaty, anti-Māori policy by this government, and we need to keep pushing for upholding of that founding agreement, the basis of which is a respectful, mutually respectful relationship between the Crown and Māori. And that is the way to, you know, cohesive nationhood, which is what we all want.
Mm. Kia ora. Thank you, Steve. Lovely to chat and hear from you and all the happenings for the Green Party and across the government. Thank you so much. We'll be talking to you soon.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.